Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In the aftermath of the Parkland, Florida high school shooting, claimed 17 lives, Ohio Democrats have called for tougher gun laws, and Republicans have targeted mental health and suggested arming school staff. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Joining us, Columbus Dispatch Public Affairs Editor Daryl Roland. Welcome back, Daryl.
Good to be back, Ann.
And Cleveland.com Statehouse reporter Jackie Borchardt. Welcome back, Jackie.
Good morning.
And Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Andy Chow. Welcome back.
Hi.
Let's talk about what's going to fly in the Ohio General Assembly first. Any sense in general, Andy Chow, about what might happen there?
As far as gun control goes,
responding to this latest tragedy,
I don't think we're going to see anything go the way that gun control advocates want it to go at this point. For the past couple of years, the momentum has been shifting the other way, which is eliminating gun regulation. So I don't see that changing, even with the heightened sense of calls to action from advocates on the other side. I just don't see it happening. I think the one thing that might change it at this point is if the governor really tries to get involved. He's not one to try to get involved, and especially this assault rifle ban that came out from the Senate Democrats. He was asked about it, and his staff said, well, as you know, the governor doesn't comment on pending legislation. So if we thought that things were going to change as far as this goes, it doesn't seem like he's going to change the way he does things.
On the other hand, he has convened kind of a top secret committee, panel, working group, whatever. I don't know what the official term is yet because they haven't made much public about it. But apparently it includes, people from all sides of the issue. It includes some former state legislators, former Senate President Tom Niehaus, a Republican, and Cleveland area Senator Nina Turner, a Democrat. And they're apparently close to coming out with some common sense solutions on a couple areas.
I don't think those are your words. I think those are Governor Kasich's words.
Right.
Common sense.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of his – that's been his tack since, after the shooting in November in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when he kind of started, pivoting toward, gun control is an extremely loaded term. And, you say that and half the people who hear it think one thing and half mm-hmm. think another. So, he's kind of adopted the common sense – solutions term to apply to ways to look at gun violence. Again, that term means different things to different people.
Daryl Roland, that top secret committee or panel or group that the governor has convened in the last week is supposed to report something out today or tomorrow?
Well, he expressed hope that it would be by the end of this week.
Oh, okay.
This is a group that's been meeting, and we knew that they had at least one session, but it's all very hazy and it was very secretive. Finally, we got those first two members. The governor told Jessica Werman from our Washington Bureau a few days ago who to him was, Jackie says, former Senator Nina Turner, who, by the way, was the co-chair of his committee, along with John Bourne from the Department of Safety. To come up with community police recommendations mm-hmm. after all the police shootings and tensions. And frankly, that was very well received. Senator Turner, liberal Democrat, but also the mother of a police officer up in Cleveland. So she wore an interesting two hats. And that was a committee that my understanding is some other states are looking at what Ohio has done on that. That's frankly one of the better accomplishments. I think in retrospect, you could put on the Kasich administration's side. But right now, Governor Kasich it's hard keeping up. Back in 1994, he was one of the Republicans that crossed over and voted for the ban on what are called assault weapons, or not really assault weapons, whatever. Let's not get into that, get sidetracked by that, so-called assault weapons. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like he spent the next 25 years trying to live that down. Say, well, I thought it would work, and it didn't, and I don't believe that way anymore. The gun rights folks have long memories. They did not really, they weren't keen on Governor Kasich, even in his 2010 governor's race.
They thought that that would give Ted Strickland an important edge over him.
Yeah. And Ted Strickland, you know, he had the A rating from the NRA and was favored. Now, by 2014, the gun rights folks had forgiven all. And part of the reason is from basically day one in the governor's office until late last year, he signed every pro-gun rights piece of legislation that's come before him.
Right.
Now, most of those, maybe even all of them, were in the form of expanding concealed carry rights or reducing restrictions on where you can carry concealed weapons, whether it's in daycare centers or bars or what have you, what you have to declare when you're pulled over by a police officer, things of that nature. He had a page on his website totally dedicated to how pro-gun he was, and he'd done that. A week ago Sunday, he goes on CNN and says, you know, we need some, you know, this is where this phraseology, the reasonable or common sense gun control legislation comes in. Suddenly that page on the website disappears and there's arguments about how we need common sense gun control legislation. Now, this Sunday he gets on with, actually it was Friday, gets on with Chuck Todd, MSNBC or NBC's Meet the Press for their daily show. And talks about that assault weapons ban. And it's almost like bragging about it. You know, I was for the assault weapons ban back in 1994. And there's no, as if there's no intervening decades where he tried to live it down. Now it's like, I was for it before I was against it. Have we heard that before, John Kerry fans?
Well, and Daryl would know probably better than any of us when he was on the campaign trail in 2015. And that did surface. And he said that was a mistake.
This was the Sandy Hook around
No.
When
his presidential campaign.
Oh, of course, yes.
Oh, yeah. And Jeb Bush's, the Super PAC, they were here in the Westboro Library back in 2015 digging through the Kasich archives. You can go do it too, folks, if you want to. Slow day or whatever. And they publicized the very letter from Bill Clinton to John Kasich. Thank you, John, for having the courage to cross over and vote with us. And, you know, it was typed in, you know, President Bill Clinton. Of course, he crossed that out and signed Bill.
Yeah.
That letter lives on. One of my tweets a few days ago, somebody brought up that letter and said, never forget. You know, this is, again, from 1994. Now, I guess John Kasich is saying, never forget. He's right there with him.
So all this is to say, I mean, yes, the governor has that group that is going to put out some type of recommendations, but it's really a question of how hard is he really going to push for any sort of change in the legislature. We've seen that the House Republicans have proposed just over a week ago this overhaul to the education system, which would allow the governor more control. We know that he has the power to push legislation when he wants to. So when this group does come out with their recommendations, how much muscle is he actually going to put behind it? Is he going to put the amount of power that he did with this education overhaul plan, or is it going to just be for show?
And the other thing is he's not gone totally gun control on us. He has come out and seems to back President Trump's call to arm teachers. So right now he's probably got both sides really mad at him. But in a way, this is quintessential John Kasich. He doesn't necessarily care about that stuff. So that's where he's coming down on these issues. And back to your original question, what's going to get done? If this if the past is any precursor to the future, unlike stocks, we can say that about the legislature, right? I think we can do that legally on public radio. Nothing is going to get done in terms of limiting handguns, or very, very little. I think what you'll see is maybe some more money for school safety, things of that nature. Republicans have already pointed out the things they've done along those lines. In fact, they've allowed school levies to be proposed to pay for added security measures. There's a suburban district up in Cleveland where the mayor of that town has called on the school board to put a levy that would be fairly small, generally like 500 grand, but that'd be enough to put security officers in districts. I think things like that may be growingly popular.
I think the biggest thing that we could see is not going to be a bill that attaches a lot of gun control measures. I think the biggest thing we're going to see is these pro-gun bills not passing. So, I mean, there were several bills in the legislature.
Okay.
So, for example, the momentum for the bills that would extend gun
rights.
Mm-hmm. Has slowed. And I think that might be the biggest effect that we're going to see in the legislature. For example, there's the Stand Your Ground bill that was moving through the legislature. This is the one that
had a pretty healthy clip.
Yep. And that's the one where you would, your rights would be defended if somebody were to come into your house. You have more legal precedence and you're allowed to shoot that person.
Mm-hmm.
Within that bill now, they've rolled in amendments to do permitless carry, which is the thing that we've talked about in the past, where you're allowed to carry concealed in open or in places that you're usually allowed to carry openly. So basically, you can carry concealed without a permit. These are two very controversial bills that were on its way to passing, and I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see some slowed momentum there, and I think the governor even came out and said that he's not for it. So he might even, if it were to pass a legislature, he might even veto it.
That was basically the threat. That was the implication certainly that I took, that that's going to require your supermajority to override that. And then, boy, I think Andy's very astute to that observation about what it's sort of a the dog that doesn't bark. It's always harder to do that. But, I think he cuts to that. It's because we've seen this year after year. You can see the number one, chipping away at abortion rights. Number two, chipping away at restrictions on gun rights. Again, mainly in the concealed carry arena here in Ohio. So the latter may well flow out of this. That may be the biggest thing. And people will say, well, that's kind of an intangible thing. Again, it's something that did not happen.
Yeah.
Right? But I think Andy has a really good point on that.
You're listening to our weekly reporter roundtable. We're talking about the whole gun rights issue in light of the shooting in Parkland, Florida, that claimed the lives of 17, including 15 teenagers, students at the high school there. If you have a question or comment about gun control and what it means or gun rights issues in the Ohio General Assembly, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to talk about some of the optics in the upcoming gubernatorial campaign. There's some interesting quirks coming up. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable, and we're talking about, what's going to come up in the Ohio General Assembly or what's not going to come up in the Ohio General Assembly in light of this latest shooting rampage in a high school in Parkland, Florida, claimed 17 lives. It seems to have been a turning point on many levels, not least of which is in General Assemblies across their legislatures across the country. Florida is getting a lot of pressure, but they decided last week not to pursue gun control legislation. Even in the with witnesses to the shootings up in the gallery. So we're also saying that Ohio General Assembly probably won't do much in the way of gun control legislation. However, as one of my guests, Andy Chow, pointed out, they may not pursue gun rights legislation either. So tell us what you think, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. As I said, Andy Chow from Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau is with us. Also, Daryl Rowland, Public Affairs Editor for the Columbus Dispatch, and Jackie Borchardt, Statehouse reporter for Cleveland.com. Let's just go ahead and get to some of these calls right now. Holly in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Holly.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was wondering if anybody on the panel knew whether or not the current background checks, for purchasing a gun goes into the juvenile records or do they only search adult records? And if that's accurate or if that's correct, is there any movement towards making those background checks go into adolescent records?
Well, I'm just going to say, I think adolescent records are closed after your I don't know if you can or not.
I don't have an answer to that, but I think, yeah, generally the juvenile record is kept at the juvenile period because the thought is that, you know, it gives them a chance to rehabilitate.
When you turn 21, right? You magically turn something else.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that they are closed off. So I don't have an answer to that question, but I do know that there are people who are trying to extend background checks, the so-called gun show loophole, where right now you can go to a gun show or buy your guns online and avoid getting a background check.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I must confess somewhere in ignorance, and like Andy says,
it's a good question, though.
Yeah.
Especially in light of the recent shooting and these other shootings where you have, people who have proven to have disturbing histories and then going back to their old schools.
Doug in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I'm wondering if any of the conversations have talked about providing mental health services for those individuals that are being bullied by their fellow classmates. I mean, we hear in the news someone is bullied, then they go get their parents' gun and goes and shoots somebody.
Hmm. Well, mental health has certainly been raised as an issue, mental health screenings, that kind of a thing. Anything?
I know that, like, there are plenty of schools who have school counselors. I know a lot of schools that have a lot of bullying programs in place. I don't think that there's a widespread law to make it a standardized across the board. But in each individual school district, they have their own programs in place to help bullying and to help people who are bullied and to help the person who is the bully.
I think that's one thing that I've heard from, you know, my educator friends in the wake of this most recent shooting is that they wish they had maybe more school counselors or more, you know, support for students in
that
way.
Was this a case of a bully, though? Was this guy being bullied?
It's everybody has their own side, but it sounds like he was the one who might have been the bully to a lot of people, or he's the one who caused a lot of other people concern and they complained about him.
Now, there is a proposal that's sort of in the formative stages, and because it's in the formative stages, it's kind of murky exactly what you're talking about. Again, Governor Kasich referred to this over the weekend, where if you were perceived as a threat to yourself or your family, from a mental health standpoint, that you could go through, there could be a legal process available to family members where they would actually go into the home and confiscate the guns. Now, again, gun confiscation, that's, you talk about...
Talk about a red flag.
Red flag to our gun rights community. Yeah, that's it. But is that something conservatives could get behind? Because the conservatives always side of this often emphasizes the mental health aspect. Well, if you're going to emphasize the mental health aspect, it does seem like it has to be more than just counseling. I mean, if worse comes to worse, you know, there has to be some action options. But boy, you're talking about some basic civil rights that would be in play here. So that could be how you enforce that would be the real trick.
And I think it would have to be comprehensive. So, I mean, there are school counselors who can be there to help students. But like Jackie said, there's a lot of school districts that lack those resources. And then on the other end, this person went through a lot of problems. He had just lost his mother. I think that there were issues with children's services. So it's things that are inside the classroom, but then outside of the school building as well.
There is also, and Doug, thanks for that call, concern by the mental health community and that rights could be taken away from them as well. Everybody who is mentally ill and goes in and shoots up a school, not everybody who is mentally ill is violent.
Right, correct.
It's still the needle in the haystack statistically.
And there are a lot of statistics that show that. There's a lot of mass shooters who do not suffer from psychosis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Keeping in mind the vast amount of murders conducted by gangbangers and groups like that, and if the Democrats really want to reduce gun deaths in this country, why don't they support a law that outlaws guns held by Democrats?
I'm sorry, held by Democrats?
Yeah, because the majority of gun deaths in this country are conducted by Democrats, particularly the game bangers. You can't tell me any way, shape, or form that any of those are Republicans.
I haven't seen any evidence that they're Democrats.
Yeah.
But I also think that if Democrats are proposing gun control, it would also be for those people as well. So I don't think they're creating gun control just for Republicans. If they want to limit guns, it would be for anybody despite their party affiliation.
Yeah. Speaking of the NRA, you know, the biggest gun rights group in the country, right now there's a little debate going on about whether they're a lobby group or not. And their chief spokesperson has said that it's more like a club with members. And certainly there are many members, NRA card-carrying NRA members out there. But is there any doubt that it is a lobbying group that spends a lot of money funding pro-gun rights lawmakers?
I run into this issue a lot. I mean, it's not just the NRA. It's a lot of groups. I mean, you can call them special interest groups or advocacy groups. Whenever you use the word lobbyist, they get mad. I mean, that's on both sides of the aisle. So I'm not surprised that that's what they're saying. But if you have somebody who's lobbying for a particular interest with lawmakers, then I think it's fair to say you're a lobbyist.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's no denying that. I mean, John Hohenwalder is a registered lobbyist in Ohio. You look at the campaign contributions. That's not just to keep your club active. It's certainly to be influential. But are there aspects of a club? Well, I suppose, you know, I was growing up, I learned to shoot. That was like an NRA-sponsored activity. What was the Eddie Eagle program for
that's
safety?
That's right, Eddie Eagle, right.
I don't know if that still exists. You don't hear much about it.
I think it still exists.
So, I mean, it's a huge group. They do lots of things. I mean, many of them non-controversial.
It started out about that, but it changed, what, about 20 years ago? Wayne
LaPierre.
Well,
I don't know. You just listen to their speeches, and I didn't hear in Dana Loesch's speech or Wayne's speech before CPAC, for instance, anything talking about club activity. It was right. All about rights and how we need to elect the right people and preserve our side in this whole big debate. There's nothing about that I heard, anyhow.
I think it's...
we need to keep the clubhouse clean.
Yeah.
I think it's splitting hairs. And if you wanted to take an example from, from a different angle, you could say, well, the Sierra Club is a club. And it's a group of people who can have members, but they still have somebody who's working at the State House and on Capitol Hill to advocate for what they want.
I'm taking these in the order in which they are received. John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, Ann. I just wanted to make kind of a general comment about guns here in Ohio. I just recently turned 21, and one of the things I wanted to do was buy a handgun. So I went, and it seemed very easy for me to get a gun. Now, I understand, I pass a background check. I don't have any felonies, misdemeanors, no crimes. I'm not a criminal. But I was able to go into the store, walk out with a gun in about 20 minutes. And then I also just I wanted to get my concealed carry. I'm also a liberal person. I understand the need for gun control. So I wanted to get my concealed carry. I went, took the class at a registered, concealed carry place in order to get the class in. And so all you pretty much had to do was sit through the 8-hour class. I don't feel like I learned much about the concealed carry laws here in Ohio. And as long as you kind of hit the target once and passed the open note test that we took at the end, you got your certificate. And there was a lot of people around me. I grew up on a farm knowing how to shoot guns, so I understood it. But there was a lot of people around me that it was their first time shooting guns, and it was kind of scary how they didn't know much about guns, didn't know much about the law, but they walked out of there and could get their concealed carry just like me. So I thought it was just a comment for some of you guys to think about.
Well, That's an interesting observation. Now, you know, you had a clean record. You went through the class. I mean, you did what the rules, you know, have you do. So it's not necessarily meant to be hard, but just you do have to jump through some hoops. Now, what the debate's been about for the past several years in Ohio is that even those hoops, at least in terms of concealed carry, are regarded as too onerous. Mm-hmm. The Ohio training, well, hey, if you got somebody who's gotten a license or gotten a concealed carry permit in another state, where the training may not come close to what even Ohio requires, that's okay. There's reciprocity now in Ohio, something that has been proposed in, at the federal level. I don't think that's passed yet, but it's granted in Ohio. Mm-hmm.
John, thanks for that those insights. Daryl in Massillon, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Daryl.
My question is, where are the parents in all this? I mean, everybody seems to blame video games and things. And I have four kids, mm-hmm. three of which are boys. I've owned guns since I was 18. I've taught my kids all how to shoot guns, what to do with guns. And I spend a lot of time when they were younger with my kids. I played video games with them. I major. Two of the boys got in trouble. When Columbine happened, my one son made a comment and ended up getting suspended.
I'm sorry. It's a little muffled, Daryl. Can you?
His one son made a comment after Columbine and ended up getting suspended.
Oh. Yeah, he got suspended. Also, he made the comment was pretty something everybody knew. The school he went to, he made a comment to teachers that somebody would have to take out because they were military. And he got suspended for it. When I went, you know, I talked to the cops and everything, and I said, you know, you guys thought that. Why is it so bad that he thought that? Well, this son, he got suspended again for speaking his mind, and he's now a cop. But I guess my question, I just don't understand, where are the parents in all this?
I guess.
Well, the parent in the most specific Florida case was dead.
Both of them.
And that's the problem. And
well, he was living with a family. They knew he had a lot of guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know, my brother Daryl in Massillon. my goodness, that lament is asked about so many ills in our society.
What about the guy that killed all those people in Las Vegas, though? I mean,
a grown man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, sure. I mean, if we had perfectly good parents, you know, there'd be a lot less trouble in the world. But it's not happened. And the old term broken family and all that, single parent households, you know, family's not been a real, you know, families are in trouble in this country. And, you know, in some sense, we are reaping the whirlwind a bit here. Maybe that sounds.
I think, you know, collectively, your callers have touched on is that there's not one thing that you can point to in this when something like this happens. And, you know, people like to pick one thing, but it really is a lot of different factors. Right. And, you know, like your last caller said, he had, you know, owned guns his whole life, his whole adult life, and, you know, taught his children, I assume, how to, you know, handle them properly and what to do and not to do. And, you know, that's just one of many factors in an incident like this.
And if I could add, because Jackie makes a good point, this is a big holistic problem with many factors. And the one thing that a lot of people want is for the CDC to investigate gun crimes and mass shootings as a public health crisis. And apparently we did this when people were dying in car accidents all the time, and then we started getting seatbelts and airbags. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that can help with that is that there are so many factors in play that it would be nice for somebody like the CDC to come in to put up all those stats. But that has been opposed by...
But Congress has banned it. And when Steve Inskeep on NPR was asked this morning, was asking the governor of Kentucky, where there was a recent shooting as well in a school, whether or not we could study it, because wouldn't some statistics help? He would not answer the question. Yeah. There still seems to be a lot of opposition to just studying gun violence in general in this country. Daryl, thanks a lot for that call. David in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hi. You guys do a real good job, and I'd like to check my perception against your perception. Given all the weapons that are in the country, it is not realistic to think we can remove them or control them.
Right.
Second, a person who shoots unarmed people, especially children, is not mentally stable. By definition, their behavior is aberrant and extreme. Third, less than 1% of the mentally ill do commit crime, but there are other mental disorders that can prompt such killing, like paranoia, delusions, extreme depression, wanting to die, uncontrolled anger. Last, we have no mental health system. Less than a quarter of people requiring or needing mental health get any treatment. Fewer get effective treatment. Therefore, if we created a mental health system and educated the public in how to recognize and where to turn for help besides the police, how to, you know, prevention's the best treatment. If we had a mental health system, this stuff would really decrease in frequency, much more than the failed, impossible attempt to control guns. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, David. I think the key word there was system. We don't have a system of mental health. It's a...
Yeah, and anytime you want to get funding for it, you have to put it on the ballot as its own separate issue.
Yeah.
But when it comes to other issues, it's already funded. I hear the same complaint when it comes to drug addiction. It'd be nice to get more funding and not have to put separate things on the ballot to get Adam H. funding.
Mm-hmm. We will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It is our weekly reporter roundtable. With us, Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com, Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch, and Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio. We're talking about gun laws in Ohio and across the country as much as we can, mostly in Ohio, though. And what might change or not in the wake of the latest mass shooting in Parkland, Florida? We've been taking your calls. We'll take it one from Jay in Newark right now. Hello. Hello, Jay.
Yeah.
You're on the air.
I wanted to answer that question the lady had there a few things back about the background check.
Yeah, and whether or not they go into juvenile records, right.
Yeah, they do not go into juvenile records, and they only go back, if I remember right, either 5 or 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Is what their background check goes.
That's interesting. Okay, yeah, because juvenile records are sealed. But Jay, thanks for that. I appreciate it. Take care. Let's see, Bill in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Give me 1 second to take it off the speakerphone here.
Please do.
Where are you?
All right, we'll get it off speakerphone and we'll come back to you. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Yes, Sam. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just wondering to ask the question if universal health care in America, would that actually give us and provide us with mental health care as like, the free, as I understand, the universal health care would be free health care is that considered also a part of health care in a society of law-free?
In the original proposal put forth by the Obama administration, they did want mental health included in the Affordable Care Act. Am mm-hmm. I right?
I remember there being some aspect of mental health being in the Affordable Care Act, but I don't think it ended up.
No, it did not end up in it.
What I also decides what you want to consider
universal health care.
Yeah, and I guess I mean universal health care. I guess at this point is just a term. When we hear about this kind of thing, we also hear Medicare for all, because people like the Medicare system and think, why not just make that for everyone? And so I think you'd have to see if Medicare also provides mental health.
And I don't think it does. No. Thanks, Chris, for that question. Wish we could answer some of these, but it's good to be raising them. Fritz in Centerburg, you're on the air. Hi, Fritz.
How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I would submit, even if they outlawed assault weapons today, there's still millions of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't they put a huge tax on, like cigarettes, on ammunition for the things and high-capacity magazines and start buying these damn things back? And then we could take the weapons and sell them to somebody, one of our third-world country people that we're in league with. And like I said, why hadn't anybody said about the tax on the ammunition?
I would imagine someone's probably thought of it, but for the same reason that pro-gun rights legislation continues to get into
It's a good point. The idea has been brought up that you can't get back the guns, but you can take away the ammunition. And the thing that separates America from other countries that also has guns is that it's easier to get ammunition in America than in places like Canada.
And, you know, if you're buying an AR-15, those are not, at least in my book, those are not cheap weapons. So if you're going to shell out hundreds of dollars for that, the bullets are going to be, even with a high tax, I mean, unless you're talking about 1,000% or something, mm-hmm. you're still going to be able to buy the bullets. There are proposals to limit the size of the magazine, so you don't, you know, these extended magazines you can put over. In fact, I think there's a proposal in Ohio to limit them to, is it 9? Because the standard is usually your 9-shot magazine. So you get an extended magazine, that might be illegal. Again, you know, we talk about all this stuff and, my gosh, we as a society and a culture, we're just all struggling to come to grips with this, and we're coming at this with different perspectives, and I think we all feel a little bit helpless because we know
it's very scattershot.
It's
no scattershot. Pun intended.
Well, yeah, and as Jackie brought up, there's no golden solution here. We like simple solutions. This is not a problem that's made for simple solutions. We're in an age where the rhetoric gets in and messes things up toward mm-hmm. getting a sincere solution. So that's why we have talk shows like this where, you know, Ann gets bombed by calls and they're talking about it on national TV and all that. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I don't know if we're any closer than we were to start with.
But I think it's good to talk. Fritz, mm-hmm. thanks a lot for that call. Amy in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I wanted to say that I'm unfortunately, 55-year-old woman. I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I just recently made the decision to purchase a handgun for my own protection. And I've gone through getting my concealed carry license. And I wanted to provide a little counterpoint to the person that talked about his earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I actually found it to be quite informative, and perhaps it depends on the place you go to get that education. But I learned a lot, and I've taken several classes, so I didn't just pick up a gun and get my license.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I wanted to point out about it is that it's not a cheap process. It cost me several hundred dollars to take the class. It cost, you know, $67 to get the license. And then, of course, you have to purchase the arm. So it's not like you can just get one out of a bubblegum machine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the decision to get a gun has opened my eyes to this whole gun control issue and the presence of guns in our society. And it's been very eye-opening.
How so?
Well, I, like I said, I'm a lifelong Democrat,
mm-hmm.
and I think I had the kind of knee-jerk reaction like everybody else has. Oh, let's just ban this, ban that. And what I'm realizing is that, as the person on the panel just recently, just moments ago said, guns are everywhere. And we're not going to be able to get that horse out of the, you know, back in the barn. So we have to look at other things besides trying to control access, because that's not going to happen.
Okay. Thanks, Amy.
I do think that when somebody offers a ban on quote unquote assault weapons, I think it is the one huge swing of a bat when it comes to gun control issues, when there are many, many different other provisions that might be easier to swallow on both sides of the aisle that we never even get to, because we're always talking in such broad schemes about what to do, and then we don't tackle these smaller things. For example, when the Chardon High School shooting happened a few years back, the state legislature had a joint task committee where senators and representatives sat on a big committee, and they would meet for hours at night. And one of the big things that kept getting brought up was the idea of having laws around locking up your weapons, just making sure that you have to keep your weapons in some sort of safe mm-hmm. so your children can't get to it. Because we talk about mass shootings a lot, but one of the biggest problems that happens is when a child gets a gun and accidentally shoots themselves or a friend.
Right.
And these smaller things like that, we've talked about it, but nothing really gets proposed to do anything about those things.
One more call on guns, and I want to turn to a little politics. Oops, I'm sorry, I just dropped that call accidentally. But be that as it may, let's move on, because I do want to talk about politics for a few minutes in the Ohio governor's race coming up. The presumptive Democratic frontrunner, Richard Cordray, hasn't problem getting through a Democratic primary. He has an A rating from the NRA. Where does that even come from? It hasn't really been that well known, although he has used it on campaign literature.
Right. This stems from when he was Attorney General about 10 years ago. He defended part of it comes from, you know, Richard Cordray would not be classified under most definition as a liberal Democrat, quite frankly. And he has, you know, acknowledged the rights of people to have guns and has not, been a big advocate of gun control issues throughout his career, mm-hmm. you know, legislatively or in statewide office. Now, he's Attorney General. He has to defend Ohio law. So, from that sense, he had to defend when Ohio law was challenged that took away the local control of local communities, Columbus, Cleveland, what have you, to regulate guns within their city limits. Columbus, I think, had banned it in parks. But there was a specific litigation that emanated from Cleveland. They challenged that law, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and basically it kind of went to the U.S. Supreme Court as well. And Richard Cordray was an advocate for that law. Again, he was Attorney General, number one, so he had to. Now, on the other side of the coin, he also basically bragged about that to gun rights advocates. There is a brochure from his 2010 campaign when he sought re-election as Attorney General, basically targeting gun rights people, saying, look, I've got the A rating before from the NRA. I'm endorsed by the Buckeye Firearms Association. And look, I took the lead in defending your rights before the highest court in the land, you know, to have your guns. So that sticks with him. He is not walking away from that record. And that's right now probably the sharpest contrast in the governor's race between he and Dennis Kucinich, the former congressman and Cleveland mayor, of course, wants to, in effect, overturn that. He is circulating model resolutions throughout the state where he wants local governments to petition the legislature saying, get rid of this, give back our local control. And in fact, he shot out something this morning. Again, there's just terrible puns here that are totally unintentional, folks. He sent out something this morning about Akron City Council, where his running mate is a member. He's going to consider an ordinance tonight, I believe, asking a resolution probably, asking the legislature to, you know, you need to go back, restore local government's ability to restrict these guns if they want to within their limits. Now, opponents of that say, then you're going to have a patchwork of laws all across Ohio. This is banned here, but you go 20 feet across the line, it's not banned, and that's no good.
You know, we see this issue has been dominating social media. I'm sure that your Facebook feed, everybody sees comments on this issue. And I just wonder how much of this really impacts a voter's decision when they go to the ballot. I've been talking to some of my more conservative friends who I know that when it comes to the issue of abortion, that sort of sways who they're going to vote for. But does gun regulation sway a voter? Is that a litmus test for whether they're going to decide one way or another? And I think it'll be interesting to see in this primary whether that does have a big impact, because it hasn't really in the past.
Well, if you look at just all the way back in 2016, P.G. Sittenfeld, a Democrat from Cincinnati, challenging Ted Strickland, he tried to make the gun He tried to make the gun issue the issue. Mm-hmm. And, Strickland evolved on his previous position of, getting the A rating from the NRA and the endorsement against John Kasich in 2010. And that issue ended up not being the main issue for voters in that primary.
But I do wonder if somebody with a little more money to back him up and a little more grassroots support behind him, like Dennis Kucinich, I do wonder if maybe if he, and it seems like he does, make this a huge issue on his platform, that maybe that could sway voters in a tight primary.
And in that case, the Democratic Party had come out to endorse Ted Strickland, did it not?
They had,
yeah.
And they're not endorsing this year.
They're not endorsing it, right? Okay, just depends on what year it is, folks. So this week we're looking forward to seeing what the governor comes up with in terms of a response to this latest shooting in Parkland, Florida, with some kind of recommendations from his secret committee. Not so secret anymore, but be that as it may. We have a primary coming up in May that's going to be very telling, mm-hmm. in terms of how the voters respond, at least on the Democratic ticket, to this issue.
Well, on the Republican side, we shouldn't leave out Mary Taylor and Mike DeWine from this discussion. Because Mike DeWine has one of those gun votes, from back in the day, just like John Kasich did. Now, he is, again, gone back from that. But there are conservatives who still remember that. And Mary Taylor is doing her best to make sure they do. Again, many ardent folks, I suppose, on any issue, but certainly including the gun issue. You crossed me up 20 years ago. I'm going to remember that, and I'm never going to trust you. I don't know about ever again, but I don't by now. So she's trying. She is one. She's trying to pull herself as a purist on abortion. No exceptions. It should be banned. And on gun control, no restrictions beyond the Second Amendment, which is about, I guess, as pure as you can get in terms of gun rights. Now, again, that primary is going to revolve on a whole bunch of issues, but that's her game plan. Out in the race.
It is a big shift from a couple of months ago when John Husted was still a candidate in the race, and I mean his first campaign ad had him with a gun on it over his shoulder the whole time, and now you kind of see some people trying to get away from that. But again, when you're running in the Republican Party, it's hard to know which way you need to sway on that issue if you're just talking strictly
which
politics.
Way to sway.
Well,
which
again,
way to
Mary
bend.
Taylor was. At that time, that was what, last fall, when she was auctioning off a gun as part of her campaign.
Yep,
to raise money. Around the Las Vegas shooting. And she had no apologies. She went right ahead with it and wasn't turning back. So that is the tact she is taking.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there, a lot of pro Second Amendment people out there who don't want to see a correlation between mass shootings happening and their right to own a gun. And so that she represents a lot of people out there who would feel the same way.
That's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch.
The team's back together again, Ann.
Yes, we're back. Jackie Borchardt of Cleveland.com.
Thanks for having me.
And Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau. Thank you.
Have a great week.
Thanks to everybody for your calls. Appreciate the discussion. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.